Blog Talk Radio.
Man's voice here on this Sunday afternoon. For those of you that are locked in your houses or wherever you are, we're going to do a show for you today and call your friends and neighbors and tell them all to join in and listen to the show. You can get us on Facebook. If you just search Facebook, you can find us there and tap the little man's voice icon and it'll bring you into the show, or tell them to call in 646-668-8740. Or they could just Google the man's voice, and that will show them how to get in. Also, I want to welcome the panel, but I want everyone to introduce yourselves. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 5 guys on the line here, or 4 actually, and tell them where you're from. So let's go with, I'm going to give you the last 4 digits of your phone number. You say who you are and where you are. 2293, who are you and where are you?
Is this a trick question? this is Ron.
You do know your phone number, right?
I guess it's a test.
I think so. Yeah, this is a test. Hello, everybody. This is Ron Staten. I'm in Miami, Florida. Beautiful, sunny, 90 degrees right now. And wish I was outside instead of trapped in my house.
Wow. Okay, so let's go with 4904. Those are the last 4 digits. That person just came on. And it is, tell us who you are, sir, and tell us where you are at. It's your last 4 digits, 4904. There you go. We're going.
Hey, guys, this is Darius Glasgow. I'm in the beautiful metro Atlanta, Georgia area.
All right. So if you last 4 digits are 7720, tell us who you are and where you are calling from.
Hello, world. It's Don Wiggins, the man with unshakable faith, calling in from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Fort Lauderdale, Florida?
Okay, now, there's one of 2 numbers that are going to get this person some. If your last 4 digits are 2035, tell us who you are and where you are. Okay, if 2035 is not your number, what about 9929?
Okay, hi, this is Michael Marquis, and I'm calling from beautiful, sunny Southern California, Los Angeles, to be exact. Glad to be representing the west side of the country, because the west side is definitely the best side. So, good to be on, everybody.
But Michael, it's known to be a little shaky at times.
Yeah, but it's 85 degrees with no humidity year round. So there you go.
How boring.
All right. So, of course, that was the guy up in Michigan where it's cold and snowy. So we know why he said that.
Well, it's not. It's sunny and 65.
For you guys, that's hot.
Yeah, it is. It is hot.
All right, so let's get into our show and talk about things that are going on. But the one thing that's going on that everybody's talking about, of course, is the coronavirus. But there's so many sides to this that are popping up. And one of them, I think, is everybody's wanting to get out of their houses. Everybody's wanting to have the governor or the president or whoever is in charge of opening up the states to let people mingle. Either I think there's as many people who want to get out as many people who saying, no, don't let us out because it hasn't been under control yet. And we don't have enough test kits and we're not sure what's going on. So I think we're as United States, I think, don't know exactly what's really, really the bottom line to getting out of our houses. When is going to happen? Who? When do we get test kits? Are they available? Are they coming? Darius, what do you think? Because I do know that the president and the governors are at a push. I know on this morning on some of the talk shows, there were governors on there saying that governors are saying that it's not true that there are test kits, and the governors should not be held accountable for being able to test people because they haven't been able to get the equipment, you know, necessary to do that with. So, Darius, do you think that how do you think the president of the United States should be in position to open up the country, or should it be the governors and working with the president? Or how do you see that?
I think the plan he laid out was a good one. Each state has different variables. They have different numbers of people who are infected or people who have died, and they have different circumstances. You know, you have, I think you and I were talking the other day, you have some states that practice social distancing as a way of life. You know, when you go out to Nebraska and Wyoming, Montana, you know, those guys are already, you know, living 10 miles apart anyway. So, of course, the guidelines for them are going to be a lot different than, say, New York City. I definitely think that, you know, you got to let the governors handle it. And, you know, what they need to do is set, like what he said, an overlying guideline of how things should be done. You know, once you reach a certain peak and you start to level off, then you can start opening up. But I definitely believe that the best way to go is to let the governors handle it on a local level.
But the president is also saying that there is enough testing to move forward to reopening the states. Now, this morning, I think it was the governor of Maryland and the Democratic governors of Virginia and Michigan all disputed Trump's assertion that the states have enough testing to move forward to reopening their states. So they're saying, we don't have, coming from the top, we're not able to make a decision because we don't have the necessary equipment. As a matter of fact, the Democratic governor of Virginia said that what the president, all that he's saying and giving it as the governors have a way to make a decision based on the things that they have is just plain delusional. So do you think that's true? Do you think that the governors because you're saying the governor should, but the governors are saying they can't. They don't have the right equipment to test the people to find out to make a decision. So how do you find that to work?
It's you know, it's kind of weird and it's kind of hard to determine because you have some states that are, you know, where the states are going back and forth with the federal government saying, oh, we're waiting on the feds. And then the feds are like, hey, the states are responsible for handling it. I'll tell you what I haven't seen enough of and what I'm really, really disappointed in is a lot of these governors have not really taken hold of our accountability or responsibility for their duties as government. You know, the federal government is not there. It's supposed to be there as a fail-safe. It's supposed to be there to provide things that the states themselves are incapable of, especially when it comes to national security. But yeah, a lot of these governors that are going, and especially Cuomo in New York for one, it's like the president, everything is the president. I need this. I need. And, you know, I'm waiting on the reporters to ask, what are you doing as the governor? What is your accountability? What is your responsibility? Like, what is yours? Like, what are your resources look like? You know, that's something I've yet to hear. But I'm not informed enough to say, well, they have the test kits or they don't. I haven't really heard. I hear a lot of blame going back and forth.
Okay. What about you, Ron? What are your thoughts on this subject of the governors and the president and opening up, letting people back out? How this should work?
Well, you know, honestly, the whole thing has gotten so confusing and screwed up between the game, you know, the governors and the president. And, you know, it seems like the president can't make up his mind because he thinks that the states should be in charge. But then, you know, in a different breath, he'll say, you know, that he's the one that decides when the country will reopen. And at least I have to say that I'm glad to see that his suggested reopening plan is a phased one. And I actually heard this morning somebody say that there's really not a lot of detail in terms of timeline. So, you know, I think he's being coached, you know, for lack of a better word, by the medical advisors that he has, that, you know, you can't just press the button and the whole country reopens. You know, it's got to be, I do believe it's got to, you know, be by regions or by states or whatever you have it. You know, there's some areas like the Northeast and the Midwest that are forming coalitions of states to do what's in the best interest for the region. But you got to remember that, you know, people can still travel freely from county to county, city to city, state to state. Maybe not by airplane right now, but certainly by car. So you have to be really careful. And in terms of the testing, I don't think we're anywhere close to where we need to be from what I've heard the medical experts say to even think about certain groups of people going back to work. You know, we don't even know if the antibodies, you know, all of that works. We don't even know if once you've had the virus, if you're immune. There's so many questions that we don't know yet. And if you look at what's happened in other countries that in some other countries that started to reopen, you know, there's been somewhat of a resurgence of contagions. So I just think we have to do it very carefully. I, for one, you know, I'm not ready to just, you know, go back to work and risk my life because I'm in a high risk group. So I need to be a little more careful. I mean, if you look at the number of people that have been tested, I forget what the numbers are in Florida. Maybe Don knows, but it's a very low percentage of people. So there's still probably a ton of people walking around out there who have the virus, maybe are asymptomatic, but they can still pass it on to somebody else. You know, if they sneeze and they touch something and then I come along and I touch it, you know, you just have to be really careful. But one more thing, I did see in the news right now, you know, we need to stop making this about politics. And I just saw a tweet by Donald Trump saying that Nancy Pelosi is inherently dumb. And then another tweet by him saying that he was right about the ventilators and not needing as many all along. You know, come on, grow up.
All right. Don, you want to jump in on this conversation?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Ron, you're right on target, brother. You know, 45 wants to take bows and accolades, but he doesn't want to take responsibility. It boils down to leadership. Strong leadership. That's what we need right now. There are people that have not been tested. This past weekend, we had people lined up around the block. The National Guard and the Urban League did walk-up testing where people that didn't have cars could walk up and get tested. They ran out of tests. They got to do it all week. They're going to do it forever because the people need to be tested. We need testing. We need testing. Well, he said, I'm the boss. Everything runs through me. And then he walked it back and says, well, the governors are in charge. That's not leadership. That's not leadership. Listen, the only reason why he wants to hurry up and lift this thing is because of manna, money. It's health versus money. Let me tell you something. My health is far greater than money. I'm not going to be able to go back out there and risk my life for some money. And then what really gets me is I'm a small businessman. And he put out this small piece of chump change for small businessmen or small business companies. And the major buddies like Ruth Chris soak up $200-300 million. Not enough money, took care of his buddies, and now they gotta put out more money. You know, he's made a tobacco, he's made a fiasco of this entire situation. And if he doesn't get this right, it's gonna cost him the election. Watch what I tell you, it's gonna cost him, because the eyes of the world are on him because of his vacillating back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the thing is, he needs to shut up and let the medical team do their job. That's what, and you know, I told you he was going to dominate the media, and he's done it every single day in prime time. If I were a marketing genius for Biden's campaign, I'd say give him another hour. Give him another hour, because he's choking himself, giving me sound bites. Ooh, man, I'd love to handle Biden's campaign. My God, look at the sound bites.
Wow.
He's making a fool out of himself.
All right.
I rest my case.
Good case, sir. But I want to go out to the West Coast. I want to talk to Michael, because one concern I know about California is that's where a lot of people from Asia come into, and from Mexico up to. So California is always bombarded. So what's going on out in California there, Michael, in terms of the governor? What are they making decisions? I know that your governor there always kind of backs away from what Trump's doing and does his own thing. So how's it going out there?
It's tough out here. I mean, fortunately, we do have a good leader in Governor Gavin Newsom out here, who's been on top of this since day one and is definitely taking care of the people, unlike the leader we have in Washington, D.C., who's not doing anything and is just making this matter worse. I'm being here in California. I got to be honest with you. I actually live not far from LAX, which is an international airport, because we're an international city. And, yeah, you see them coming in every day. You see a lot of people from Asia coming into Los Angeles on a daily basis. And we have 10 million people in Los Angeles County. I mean, we have more people in LA County than the entire state of Michigan. So it's a lot different, as what the gentleman was saying, as far as opening up. You can't just open the whole country up at the push of a button. But to go even deeper than that, David, I want to talk about what Donald Trump is doing in regards to the flame throwing he's doing right now by using words like, let's liberate Michigan. And that's got people out in the streets rallying, which is a threat, because now you're just going to spread the disease a little bit more because you're out there picketing and rallying because Donald Trump is telling you we need to liberate your city. I mean, those are some strong words. I mean, that goes back to World War II and Nazi Germany to use the word liberates. He knows what he's doing. He's throwing meat to his base. He's fanning the flame. And I think the reason he's doing that is because the election's coming up and he wants people in the streets. That's what he wants. He wants a reason to call martial law, to call off the elections. And I think that's his strategy.
Oh, wow. All right. Anybody want to answer that one or answer that? What about you, Darius?
wow. Well, I don't even know where to begin with this stuff. Like, I don't know. Are we just doing opinions? Or are we basing anything on facts here? I need to know before I start. Because
I can answer that for you, Darius. Why don't we base it on facts? Because the facts have been written. All you have to do is watch and listen to it.
Okay. So let's go with this then. All right. First, let's start where Michael left off about liberating, about what he said. What he was doing was, if you want to be factual, he made the comment after the rallies in Michigan, not before. He didn't ignite that. He made a comment in response to that. What happened in Michigan and what he's talking about is he's talking about the overreaching of government. we know that the governor of Michigan has done some things that has been, well, not just her. There are a lot of governors and mayors that have been a power drunk. So, you know, you have things that telling people, oh, you can't go to your second home in the mountains. Or if you have a home by the beach, you're not allowed to go there. You're not allowed to travel there. You can't buy seeds, you know, to plant in your garden. You can't go fishing on a lake if you got a motorized boat. Like, you know, things like that are government overreach. You're telling people, okay, well, you can't go. If you have a toothache, you're in pain, you can't go see your dentist. But if you want an abortion, guess what? All the abortion clinics are open for business. So Donald Trump is speaking to things like that. He's not speaking to saying, hey, we want to have a sporting event. We want to have a concert. We want to have restaurants and bars open back up. That's not what people are protesting, and that's not what Donald Trump is saying when he says liberate. So that's first. You know, as to what Don was saying about, you know, letting the medical experts in, obviously Don's not watching the press conferences, because if you watch it every day, he's letting the medical experts get up there and say what the game plan is, what they're doing, and how they're going about that. And they lay out a plan every single day at every press conference. So people are still saying, oh, he needs to let the medical experts. Well, he is. You hear them standing up beside him. You see the Surgeon General. You see Dr. Fauci. You see the scarf lady, the CDC director. You see all these people that he parades out there every day, and yet you guys are still saying he's not doing anything. You know, and what he was doing when he was talking about the ventilators is he was showing where he was responding to people saying he wasn't prepared, he underperformed. Well, he was pointing out the fact that he overperformed. They said they needed, you know, at one point the governor of New York was saying he needed 30,000 ventilators. Donald Trump said, you're not going to need that much, but look, we're going to get you 15,000. He got them that. Now there's something like 6,000. You know, I could be off on my numbers, but it's a lot that he has in stockpile. He's not even using. He said he was going to need, you know, all of these hospital beds. There are over 1,500 hospital beds sitting vacant, not counting the ship that Donald Trump sent to New York, the Javits Center, and the pop-up hospitals that he had the Army Corps of Engineers build there. They're empty. Nobody's there. You know, they have an abundance of masks and gowns. They have all of these things, but people are still saying, oh, he's not performing. We're not getting what we need. They have more than what they need. Nobody died from lack of ventilators. Now, of course, nobody saw this coming. Did he make some mistakes? He probably did. Obviously, anybody would. But if anybody could listen to Joe Biden's podcast, if you can understand what he's saying, if anybody can listen to that and think that he would be a much better leader during a time like this, the open borders guy, the guy who said we never should have restricted travel from China, the guy who said we should listen to what the World Health Organization said, and you see how they screwed us. Anybody thinks that somebody could have done better? I'm waiting to hear the Democrat. I'm waiting to hear the Democrat come out and say what they would have done had they been president. I haven't heard that yet. All I hear is, oh, we should have acted sooner. Acted on what sooner? Do what sooner? He closed, he restricted the borders before there was even one death in the U.S. from coronavirus, before there was even a case.
All right. Anybody want to jump in on that conversation there? Because there was a lot there.
Yes, without a doubt. You know I would.
I figured you would.
There. The medical community has been saying one thing to Donald Trump. We need testing. We need testing. Now, my grandson is 6 years old. He understands we need testing. What's so stupid about that? That's what they've been saying to him. And the thing is, you need ventilators, you need equipment, you got to test the people so you can get a sample of before you try to open up a state. Because like the former caller said, people can travel from city to city and state to state. You got to test these people. And that's so important. My God, Do the testing. That's what we're saying. Do the testing.
They're producing the test as fast as they can right now. And the medical experts have already said, they went on the press conference and said the other day that there was not one objective that we put forth that Donald Trump went against us on. Dr. Fauci had to come out and clear that up because there were all kind of false reports from the New York Times and CNN saying that he's not listening to the experts. The experts came on and said there was not one directive, not one, or objective that we put forth that Donald Trump has bucked us on. So I don't know what people are talking about. He's not listening to science. When the scientists have said
No, the governors are talking. The governors are talking, Republican governors and Democratic governors. Let's take this out of politics. It's not political. We're talking about health. They're saying we don't have the equipment to do the testing. That's what they're saying. They said that all morning long on the network news, on all stations. We need testing. They don't have. And then the vice president gets on there, and he's nothing but a co-signer for Donald Trump. Every other word out of his mouth says, and our leader, Donald Trump, our president, Donald Trump, you know, answer the questions. He can't even answer a sound question. You know, the thing is, they mismanaged this piece, and now they're trying to micromanage it. Let the governors get the equipment they need to do the testing, and then let's do testing for about another month so we can put this thing to rest so it doesn't flare up again. Because if it flares up again, if he takes the quarantine off and then it flares up again, we're going to have a different conversation, gentlemen. We're going to have a different conversation. And my prayer is that all of us are on this call. It's just that simple. I got friends dying. All of us have friends dying, but they're hitting real close to me. I'm from Michigan, a state and a city, first of all, that was crying for water, crying for good drinking water. And now they're crying for a test to see if they are going to live with this disease. Crazy.
All right, let's go to what I haven't heard from Bruce. Bruce, you've been sitting back like you always do, listening to everything, and then you have comments to make. So make your comments. I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, first of all, taking the most recent first, Donald, you're way wrong on the water issue because it started several administrations ago. Flint is not, and I know you're referring to Flint because obviously I'm up here. Flint is. There are Flints all over the country. It's not just Flint. So, you know, we have to stop this pointing back and forth because all you get out of the state governments and the federal government arguing is the fact that they're not cooperating. As Darius said, and I tend to agree with a lot of what he said, they're trying their hardest to get things out in the field as fast as possible. They've implemented a number of private companies. They're not conversating it to death. They're trying to get things done. But the only way the testing, I agree with you, Don, on the one thing about we need more testing. We need to track this animal down and kill it. And the amount of testing right now is still way behind where it is now. So, yes, we do need more testing. But the only way it's going to be done properly, fast enough, and in the right places is if the federal government and the state governments work together instead of saying, well, you're not getting me this, or the federal government saying, well, you're not doing that. You don't know for a fact that the president could not have been baiting the governors all along to get them to take this and make it their own, because they do, with federal help, they do need to make it their own, because one or more of you said the closest to the issue are the people in the field, and those are the governors and the state government. So there's no way the federal government can know what they know. So the only thing I hope for, still don't see enough of, there's too many states arguing back and forth with the federal government, and it takes two to argue, I'll grant you that, to get this thing straight. And until that stops, it's not going to get solved. You can also note that there are many states you never hear from, and I'll bet you money that many of those states that don't make the news are getting things done behind the scenes. They're not trying to make headlines. They're not trying to say, look at me, I'm in charge, or you should be in charge, or I don't have enough this, or I don't have enough money, back and forth. And there again, both directions. Those states, I'll bet you money, are getting things set up and going about their business to do this plan, which I also agree that this phase plan is a good idea, because we're not going to be able to go back all at once. We don't want a repeat. We don't want a flashback. So until these states that want to make it political stop it, it's not going to get solved in those states.
All right. You know, there has been over 40,000 deaths here in the United States, and I think 761,379 was the number today, but of course, I'm sure that number has increased.
It has.
So I know that it is something that, you know, that is important to all of us. But one of the things that I saw that came out that I thought was confusing to me is stimulus checks and going out. If you look at the number that they claim was put aside for stimulus checks and you divide it by the number of people that pay their taxes, it would mean that each person should get around $5,000. But, of course, you're only getting $1,200. So that means there's a lot of money put somewhere else, and it definitely isn't being put in small businesses because they ran out of money. Now they're looking for more money. So there's a lot of money moving around that is, if you do the math, there seems to be a lot left over. And I don't know what's going with that, but one of the things that really annoyed me was these ministers who are defending, on CNN, they were defending, asking their congregations to donate their stimulus checks to the church. The churches aren't even open well, and so I guess they're not being able to get collection. But if the church isn't doing something for the people in the community, there's no reason why they should be begging for you to give them their stimulus checks. I know that religion is a big thing to you, Don. What do you think about that?
Well, the thing is, that's an isolated incident. I don't subscribe to asking a person for their stimulus check. As we say, stimulus check. I don't know about you, but I still haven't got mine. Have you got yours yet?
No, I haven't.
Have you got yours yet? Has anybody on this call received theirs yet?
My kids, Don, have gotten their $3,400, and the ones that are getting it first, the top of the pecking order is direct deposit with the IRS. If you've got set up, those are the ones that are going to get it first.
Well, the thing is, it gets me that no one on this call has received theirs. I know I haven't got mine either, and I pay my taxes. But neither here nor there. David, for a pastor to get on and ask for someone to donate their stimulus check to a ministry, I don't subscribe to that. I don't subscribe to that. You don't have to ask a person to sow into the kingdom. My pastor doesn't have to ask me to tithe. I know the value of tithing. He wants one-tenth of what I make, and he lets me keep the 90%. Now, he can do more with that 90% than my tenth that I gave him. He's got a track record and has proved that in my life time and time and time again. So I don't subscribe to that, David. And then furthermore, there's going to be a lot of churches that will not be open within the next 2 or 3 months because some pastors thought it was a convenient occupation and that occupation will run out. So it's going to be a change in every system, every world system in the world today is going to be under attack. The religious community,
the broadcast community, the travel community, the real estate industry, the banking industry. Every system in the world is going to be under attack within the next 2 or 3 months if they haven't already. Watch and see.
You know, one of the things about the churches that I found impressive were those churches that are now doing their services online so everybody could pull into them in their computers. Now, I could see, you know, I understand that. I get that the churches can't open. They can't have a bunch of people, but they can do the next best thing. Michael, what do you think about that?
I definitely want to weigh in on that. And full disclosure, I'm speaking as an atheist, so obviously I'm going to have a different view from the majority of people on the phone. But I think it's just horrendous that the church would ask people to give up their $1,200 to pay their tithe. And as you guys were talking, I Googled the 12 wealthiest pastors in America. Joel Osteen made $40 million. Pat Robertson made $100 million. T.D. Jakes made $60 million. So these guys are very well paid. And I've always been under the impression that most pastors are pimps in the neighborhood I grew up in. And here in Los Angeles, I happen to live next door to a well-known pimp named Magic Don Juan. He's my next-door neighbor. He, too, is a pastor. He walks around with the Bible in his hand every day. So when I hear them say that the church is asking for $1,200 from people who have nothing, it just kind of reminds me of how a pimp would treat his woman. So I'm totally, totally in disagreement with that decision to do that. But I also wanted to speak deeper on this whole let's get everybody back to work all of a sudden thing. Because here in California, like I said, there's 50 million people here. And if we all start moving back around, right now it's contained because of the self-isolation has really been working. And if we get to moving back around, I mean, people are going to start respreading it. It's going to be very bad. It's going to rebirth it. And I just don't think it's a very good idea for the president to be pushing this. Let's go ahead and open up real quick.
All right. Our working panelist, Jeremiah, just pulled in on us. He's on break, so let's get some words from him. Jeremiah, what are your thoughts on what's going on? Now, I'm not going to give you any subject. Just in general, what are your thoughts on what's going on with the government, with the coronavirus, with people? And I know you're sometimes at a hospital and stuff, so what are you seeing?
You know, it's very large numbers of people that are skeptical if they have the virus, people that actually have the virus. And, you know, everybody's in a panic. Everything's in a little frenzy there. But, you know, everything is – it's quarantined to the highest level, tents, separation, just like distance for people outside of the hospital. But I think that it's important to stay quarantined, and we need to continue to stay at home, not go back to work. If the government has to provide financing or finances to people – to keep things up and going and not go back to work or not to do normal things that we do every day except essentials, I think that's important, because if we try and get everything back going, the numbers are going to quadruple, honestly.
Let me ask you a question.
I was going to ask, because I heard something being spoke about you know, pastors' revenues, and they're asking, am I correct? They're asking their members of their church or congregation to assist the church in giving up their stimulus payments from the government?
Yes.
Wow.
I know that Don said it was one, but there were several pastors that I got that I saw this come from. So yes, there's I don't know how many out there are doing it, but I know that I do know that the churches are probably under pressure to pay the bills, and without taking in collections,
listen, I think churches get grants. A lot of church locations get grants, for one. For two, they receive, if you, you know, if you have a large congregation, I think that, you know, you have some reserves in your savings for one. And then two, a lot of places are like a 501 or kind of a nonprofit. So there's a lot of things that work in their favor. They shouldn't need to take their members or congregation's funds to help themselves. Because I want to see how much those same, you know, pastors or whatever they want to call themselves, I think they're cows, they want to take the funds. I want to see what they're doing with the funds they already have to help their congregation. Because, for example, if you don't drive, you know, how many people do they help drive? You know, if you can't pay your bills, how many of those people they're helping right now? Because there's some people that use Uber and Lyft to go somewhere, and they can't anymore. So how many of those members are you helping out to get around and get those essentials or bring it over to their, you know, residence? So that's crazy, man. That's really crazy. That's
despicable. Listen,
you know what? David, you just picked an isolated business. The church is a business. It's the oldest business in the world. It's 3,000 years old. And there are good churches, and there are not so good pastors, but there are good attorneys and not so good attorneys, good teachers, not so good teachers. In every business, there are some good and there are some bad. So you can't just say all churches are like that. Now, our church, the church that I attend, is one of the largest African-American Caribbean churches in South Florida. It's called the Faith Center. You can Google it. It's the faithcenterint.org. And we have 10,000 members. And let me tell you something. Since this Corona-19 virus has hit, we were prepared. We got streaming, Facebook Live, YouTube, and we're really ministering and helping the people with free food, transportation, and let me tell you.
Somebody needs to mute their phone.
Somebody needs to mute their phone. You've got to hear this, David. 10,000 members. And since this opportunity has happened, I call it an opportunity because every time there's a problem, there's an opportunity. We reach double the amount of people that attend that church now. We reach 20,000, 30,000 people from all over the world now because we were prepared. And there are going to be businesses that will go out of business because of this. And the ones that are prepared, it's going to be opportunity.
Yeah. All right.
Your positivity with that. I agree with you. You got to be prepared. But for those, you know, I want to know something that you guys can do to help those people that are led by the wrong pastors. That's the most important thing right now. You know, people that have a very little bit or have nothing are still being taken advantage of. I don't understand that.
Yeah, but Jeremiah, let me tell you something. There's always going to be sheep in wolf's clothing. You know, let me say this to you. Jesus sat with the 12 disciples daily. There were 12 of them. And there was one called Judas that stole the money. He knew Judas was going to steal the money. He knew that from the very beginning, but he let him sit at the table. Why is that?
You know, maybe, you know, he wanted to see what he was going to do and how everybody else take on to what he was going to do after he steal.
You answered your own question.
All right. I want to talk about one of the things that Jeremiah brought up was helping the people who need the help. Because right now, our unemployment statistics are just skyrocketing. And soon, st- states are going to run out of money for unemployment benefits as the jobless claims keep rising again and again. So I think should the federal government come to the states with funding for unemployment, or how should, because obviously the states aren't putting, all the states I thought were putting money aside. There was always this fund to go to in case of emergency fund, but the way you don't hear it happening much anymore, and you don't hear anybody saying they have these funds available in case of emergency, because it used to be the thing back years ago, states emergency fund. But pretty soon states are going to start needing money because they're unemployed. Rising and rising, and if like Don said, businesses go out of business, people are going out of jobs. There's we don't have that many more jobs to add them if everybody keep going out of business. So, what do you think, Bruce?
Well,
how do you think?
First,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
First of all, let me touch on the church part. Then I'll answer that. Our church is kind of a microcosm of Don's church. We're about 4,500. That feels like 400 every time you go to church. Very friendly, very outgoing. But what they do is they're very open. They have nothing to hide. We know exactly where our money is going to help. Used to be, you know, causes overseas, also causes in the United States, hunger. And you can I can go through our books anytime I want to. It's public information. Well, I would venture to say a lot of these big mega churches that tend to attract people for the wrong reasons, we'll leave it at that, are the ones that have the multi-million-dollar salaries and all this. And they're, as Don said, all churches have to be a business to some extent. But what business is that business doing? And I think the good churches, which far outnumber the bad ones, or the ones that aren't totally doing what they should, are very open, don't hide things, and you want to contribute to those churches. Even with things going down now and you can't go to the physical structure, our church also is online doing all kinds of things, and there I would venture to say that their money coming in is larger, not smaller. Because they're reaching more
people.
Yes,
it is.
And and they feel that the need is stronger. So the far outseated good churches really have nothing to worry about, as long as they keep doing God's work the way they should. So that's I don't see that as a big problem. And the other ones, they're going to continue doing the wrong thing because that's just they're the Judases maybe of the church family, if you want to get that drastic. We use them, unfortunately, as a lesson. But it's a shame that the people that count on them for helping them end up getting shortchanged in that
right,
regard.
Good.
Now, what was the
I'm
other
sorry,
thing? What was the other thing, David? That was on the church?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
But I want to
all
bring
right.
that to a little part.
I'd like to chime in on the church thing too.
Go ahead.
All right. I wanted to say to Michael and Jeremiah, you know, don't let the messenger cause you to not want to hear the message. You know, you can use to burn down someone's house. You know, you can use fire to burn down someone's house or burn someone up, or you can use fire to keep you warm and cook your food. You know, it's what you do with it that makes you bad. It doesn't mean that the fire is inherently bad. So the word of God is good all the time, you know, regardless of who's bringing it. But also, too, another thing you have to look at these pastors with the mega churches, that's not all salary. I know one of the pastors that you named, they don't even collect a salary. This pastor produces movies, he writes books, he does speaking engagements, he gets hired from corporations, he gives $100,000 speeches from corporations, he's been paid as much as $1 million to speak. So don't look at that as him taking money from the poor, you know, all the time. And I'm not defending any of these guys. I'm just saying it's not really up to us to judge them. It's what we want to do is we want to hear the word. And, you know, they won't skip accountability, trust me. So if they're doing that, you know, what you think they're doing, they're going to be judged for that. But it doesn't change the word. The word remains. It'll be here when they leave. It'll be here. It was there here before they got here. You know, and the Bible says heaven and earth will pass away, but not a single letter from the word of God.
All right. I want to bring that to a close right now and then go somewhere else, because we're, as men and families, there's a question I'm going to get. I'm going to pull the panel for. In one of our federal institutions or jails, more than 1,300 inmates have tested positive for the virus, and this was in Ohio. But they're testing all around and finding out there are a lot of people in these that are being locked up that are causing the inmates to get the virus. So the question is, that's bouncing around, is should they let inmates out of the prisons who don't have, who hadn't killed anybody or raped or anything, but minor things like drugs or something like that? What are your thoughts on that? Spencer just got on. Spencer, what are your thoughts on that one?
I think that's a good option. I know they have started to do that in some counties, some states, that actually some of the inmates that was up for release in the next 6 months, they was just releasing earlier. And that would ease the population inside the prison. It would create more social distancing. Because from what I heard, is not only are they on lockdown, but if they get another case, so those on lockdown for 2 weeks, if they get another case in the prison, they'll go back on lockdown for another 2 weeks, like the whole prison. So, it, you know, families and friends or would not be able to see their loved ones or however they go, how case that may go, if they're going to see them. So, I think it's a good thing, actually, to, you know, just to ease some of the population, some of the spreading that's happening, because it's starting to get worse and worse as I'm seeing day by day.
What about you, Bruce?
David, can I chime in on that? That's a very good topic. I'd like to chime in on that, please. People of color make up about maybe 17% of the United States population, but we look at 40 to 50% of the prison population. And this disease is disproportionately affecting Black people. It's a proven fact. The records show that. And they just let Michael Cohen out, Trump's attorney, and put him on house arrest, which I totally concur to do something like that. But there's a legend by the name of Bill Cosby that should have been let out as well. 80 years old, underlying illness. I hope he lives through this situation. He should be let out. Why isn't he let out?
Yeah, I want to weigh in on that too, if it's all right, real quick. America has 2.4 million people behind bars right now. So to ask the question, should they let some of them out? Absolutely, they should let some of those people out. A lot of those people in there for minor offenses, marijuana, things of that nature. Some of them for just violations, meaning they've already served their time. They just violated the terms of their probation and they're back in. So without a doubt, the United States, we should let some of those people out of there. And a lot of those people, we only make up 13% of the population, us being African-Americans, not 17, but we make up 60% of the prison population. And like the gentleman said, it's killing African Americans at an alarming rate. So I think the argument to release those prisons to ease some pressure is a no-brainer.
But it should be, It should be on a case-by-case basis, not anything to do with someone's skin color or their attitude or their income or anything. Case by case, I couldn't agree more. It should be done for the right reasons, not because of some specific category somebody is in.
But, Bruce, not all of them are locked up for the right reasons.
Well, Bruce, do you think they should let Bill Cosby? Bruce, should they let Bill Cosby out, Bruce?
I'm struggling with that. I heard what you said, and I'm struggling with Bill because I was a huge fan of Bill Cosby, and a little part of me still is, but it's tough for me to answer that. I don't really want to see him die in prison or rot in prison or however somebody wants to say, but I'm not so sure he should be let out either. I'm struggling with that.
Should he be put on house arrest?
Maybe there's a way to let him finish his life a little differently, but there's going to be an equal number of people that say why. So, yeah, I'm struggling with Mr. Cosby.
What about Kwame Kilpatrick?
Same thing, case by case. He should be looked at. Now, Kwame, I'm a little closer to his geographic territory, and I don't hold Kwame in the esteem that I used to hold Bill Cosby in, that's for sure. I think in a lot of ways, he was not better for Detroit. There were others that were much better for Detroit that we used to think were worse. So I don't have a lot of fondness for him.
20 years, Bruce?
You can debate all day long on whether the sentence is fair or not. And if someone thinks it's not fair, they should revisit it. I mean, our court system is for that. But for you and I to judge it and say that's enough, I don't know enough facts, and I doubt that you do either, Don, on whether that's right or not. The ones that know should revisit it. I don't have a problem with that or an argument with that.
You know, guys,
don't get 20 years.
We only got a couple of minutes left, and I want to do a quick move around the whole table to ask the one question that Don brought up. What are your thoughts, yes or no, do you think that Bill Cosby, if doing this coronavirus scare, if it was in his, wherever he is, if they got it, should they let him out on house arrest? So a question to you, Spencer, yes or no?
I would say yes, because I don't think his senses were that much, if I'm not mistaken. I don't be wrong, but I thought it was, 7 years? Am I correct on that, something like that? That range, single digits. And like I said, if you can let, was it Michael Cohen out on house arrest, and I think he should also get he can be let out on house arrest. We know he's not a threat. I mean, he's an old man, blind, barely could walk. I don't think he's a danger to society. So I would say yes.
All right. So, Darius, what do you think?
Absolutely not. If you're going to let Bill Cosby out, then you need to let every other convicted rapist that's old out of jail. You know,
All right.
We say in one breath, oh, it shouldn't be special feticides, but then we come back and say, oh, well, because he's Bill Cosby, he's a celebrity, he should get out. No, not unless you're going to let every other convicted rapist out.
Okay, I got to move on. Don, I guess you're yes, right?
Without a doubt, he should be out.
Okay, Michael, what do you think?
He should absolutely be out. If Roman Polanski's not in jail, Bill Cosby shouldn't be in jail.
Okay, Jeremiah, what do you think?
There's a bunch of guys that are old, whatever you guys call old, whether it's over 50 or 60 or 70 or 80, that deserves the same thing.
All right. Looks like I got more whys than ends. All right. So you've been listening to The Man's Voice here on this Sunday afternoon. Good show. I'd like to thank the guys and hope everyone is being safe. Everyone's washing hands and doing all the things necessary to follow the CDC guidelines. We'll see you again or talk to you again next Sunday at 6 o'clock here same way you got in today, get in. And so you guys have a great week. Stay safe.
Take care, guys.
Wash your hands.
Wash them
well. And your mind.
Wow.
Opportunity.
So see, he wants no opportunity. He said, wash your mind. Wow.
Yeah, wash your mind, too.
Opportunity.
Okay, Superman.